This call is now being recorded.
Thank you, Miriam. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. On today's call, we have Ray Fassett, Rolf Knoben. From staff, we have Rob Hogarth, Glenn de Saint-Géry, and we have myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Tony Holmes may be joining us a little late. If he's not able to join, then he does send his apologies. And we also have apologies from Julie Headland and Ron Andruff. Thank you.
And Ken Stubb has sent his apologies.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay. Wolf, I want to go back to 3.5 here for real quick, and that's quorum. Okay, so we'll just hit the ground running.
Uh-huh.
All right, so we say there that a quorum is a majority of voting members, which includes at least one member of each stakeholder group. All right, that's pretty straightforward. Now, when we get down, now I'm going to go down now to section 5.3. You happen to have the ROP open.
Which point is it?
5.3.
Okay.
I wanted to run something by you.
Yeah.
Okay, so there in the second paragraph, beginning with members representing a majority of representatives from each house. See that sentence?
That constitutes a quorum.
Yeah, shall constitute a quorum for the transaction of business and access to Genocidal Council members present in any meeting at which there is a quorum. It could be interpreted that does not require what we define up above as a quorum, where we say it must include at least one member of each stakeholder group. We don't say that down there. It could be a discrepancy.
Uh-huh. Yes, because there's only reference made only to the houses.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So just for consistency, we should probably clear that up and put in there that that there must be at least one member of each stakeholder group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So staying with that paragraph now, and here's something that I've been thinking about. And I think what got me thinking about it was some of your comments last week that had to do with voting. And I think there are two higher level issues that we need to keep in mind as a work team. One is the bicameral structure, and two, the proposed bylaws. So what we want to be clear about, and I'm thinking out loud as I'm talking. So we want to be clear about is that we are not ambiguous in these rules of procedure to the point where council voting in some way usurps the bicameral structure or is not in complete line with the bylaws. Does that make sense?
Yes. Do you refer to a specific paragraph here?
Yeah. So let's stay with 5.3 again. Same paragraph.
Yeah.
All right. The bylaws, which I spent some time looking at this a little more in-depthly. The bylaws actually outline certain thresholds based on the type of action being taken. There are thresholds that are identified. So I'm bringing that up now. And what I'm looking at is page 15 of the document out for public comment. It says, except as otherwise specified in these bylaws, Annex A hereto, the voting thresholds described below shall apply to the following GNSO Council actions. For example, if in the bylaws it is saying that to create an issues report requires an affirmative vote of more than 25% vote of each house or majority of one house. There's an A through F here that depending upon what the action is, the bylaws are actually defining what the thresholds are.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So in our rules of procedure, we want to make sure that it's clear that the voting must meet those particular thresholds on those actions. Okay, so my suggestion is to add, for example, whenever we talk about voting in this rules of procedure, we want to be clear that A, we have thought about the bicameral structure, and B, we articulate clearly that thresholds are to meet the bylaw structure. So let me read this sentence to you. Members representing, this is 5.3, first paragraph, members representing a majority of representatives from each house shall constitute a quorum for the transaction of business and an acts of the genus whole council members present at any meeting at which there is a quorum shall be acts of the genus whole council provided they meet the voting thresholds contained in the ICANN bylaws. So putting in putting in that clarification, provided they meet the voting thresholds contained in the ICANN bylaws. So wherever we talk about voting in here, we should be clear that we're saying provided they meet the voting thresholds containing ICANN bylaws. Does that make sense to you? So it's clear?
It is clear to me. I have a general remark to that.
Yeah.
My feeling is so. As we are looking to the rules of procedure right now, and we are every time comparing what is in the bylaws, which is a higher level. You know, the higher level of the law, let me say. The bylaw is the upper level, and then the rules of procedure comes down. So what we are doing is sometimes we are just, in some cases, we are repeating what is already in the bylaws. So I think we shouldn't do so. So I think the bylaw is, they're speaking themselves, you know. They are outlining the law. So now, the only question is, what is how to bring into effect, let me say, the laws. Yeah.
Yes.
And to some extent, so it seems to me that we also moved some parts from the bylaws to the rules of procedure. So then we try well to bring it again in line with that what is already in the bylaws. So my question is only, so I'm just also speaking well.
Yeah, right.
So and thinking, is that the right way to do? Or because sometimes if we try well to repeat something, then maybe with some formulation we come into some situation which may be questionable, or which raise questions from several times. So we should avoid only to repeat what is in the bylaws. I'm not sure whether we are really doing that, but we should avoid that, and just clarify in that case to look up how to bring into effect, into really operation, all these bylaws. So coming to that, what you have said, I'm just thinking about, does it help in that way? So that means, makes it more clear what is already in the bylaw. Is there something in the bylaws which is not clear enough, which should not be repeated, let me say? Or is it something, is that a point which has to be more clarified? So.
Right. Right. I think that's exactly
that's my question. I don't have a specific
answer. I think that's exactly the point. And as I was looking at this, in this one, this is 5.3, okay? I'm just picking one out here.
Yeah.
Where I'll pick up, and acts of the genus whole council members present at any meeting at which there is a quorum shall be acts of the genus whole council. Now, if you just stop there.
So just to understand why, I understand that part of this paragraph in that way, that in any case, if the council or members of the council coming together and are going to vote under the and fitting to the voting levels, you know, which are given to in the bylaws. So then the outcome of this voting is an outcome of the whole of the JSO council. That's what I understand.
Right, right. That's exactly the point, or that's exactly the question. Are we already covering the point and then just being redundant? You know, I think you're questioning whether what I'm saying here is just we're just being redundant. Is that right?
Yes, that's the question. So because I have, in some other cases, I had the feeling that we are doing something redundantly. But it's just a question. Does it make it more clear? So my English is not that deep, but so if it helps in that way, then I will be convinced rather to do so. So I already understand this paragraph in the way that it only says, okay, if there is a voting, which has to meet the voting, let me say, levels, so then it shall be a voting of the whole GNSO council.
Right.
So understood in a correct way.
Right.
So that's what I already understood from that formulation.
Right. And let me bring Rob into this conversation. Do you think that we are clear, Rob, that you know we're being consistent with the bylaws when we start talking about voting in various sections?
That's an excellent question. I've been struggling with that as you guys have been talking about it. Every intent, I think, of what the bylaw amendments drafting was focused on, and I think the efforts that have been made at this point have been to produce that clarity. I'm still, and I guess I'm answering my own, you know, question to you. If we're still sort of struggling with this, then it's not clear. I don't know what the solution is, but I think that if you guys are having this struggle, and as I read 5.3, you know, I ask myself, what are you trying to accomplish with this section, and is it consistent with others? And so I don't know that I'm being tremendously helpful in answering the specific question that you asked. I look at 5.3 and I say, it seems like we have many more words here than are necessary. And I think the point you guys are trying to make is that the more words you write, the more chance you have for lack of clarity rather than more clarity. You know, I see 5.2 as notices of meetings. I see 5.4 is the number of votes cast. 5.3, I ask myself, what is the purpose of this section? And the two paragraphs that are written there don't seem to be addressing the same point. I don't know if they're separate sections. I don't know if you lose something if you take them out. But, you know, Ray, I think you're doing the appropriate thing here, sort of getting us to look at it in a little bit more detail. And it creates more questions in my mind than it answers at this moment.
Yeah, maybe you're hitting on a key point there. Maybe that is part of my thinking as well, is what are we trying to say that hasn't already been said? We already talked about a quorum earlier on. Seems like we're repeating that. 5.3, this is for some reason, wanting to repeat that.
Well, and it actually potentially changes.
And changes it.
You
right.
said about the quorum, because the additional words here say each house, and you guys don't have that at present in the quorum language above. In section 3.5, it doesn't talk about majority of the members of each house. And so that in and of itself may be an important point that you want to reexamine or capture.
Well, we're speaking. So, really, it comes to my mind. I understand. I had also some question marks about the what is the meaning of that paragraph 5.3. So, what I understand is the following. The one is okay. The first paragraph is very clear. Only council members can vote, cast a vote. Yes, that's the first one. Mm-hmm. And the second one. The only what I can understand is what I said before, it should be expressed that all voting, let me say, all voting results of the council or of the members of the council present voting results, they shall be voting results of the whole council. They shall be seen as voting results of the whole council. That means if there are not enough council members present for a majority vote anyway, if there is a vote, then it's not a majority vote, and there will be, according to the law, it will not be have a consequence as it's outlined in the laws. That's the only thing what I understand. You know, we don't have to explain again the voting level at this time. We have only to explain, okay, if under those conditions when the GNSO council is meeting, then the council vote shall be seen as a vote of the whole council.
Right. If you have a quorum, even though that may not, and there is then a majority of that quorum, even though it doesn't constitute a majority of the council, it's still a decision of the council. But, you know, and I think what Ray has pointed out and the challenge of a bicameral voting structure is that, and the way things have been set up in this structure, is that there are very specific voting thresholds that will govern whether something passes or not, particularly with respect to the PDP. And so those voting thresholds, in a number of respects, will supersede the quorum requirements. You know, it comes down to, for a consensus policy, if you don't have, you know, two-thirds of the votes in one house and a majority in the other house, I'm sorry, 75% of the votes in one house and a majority in the other house, then it doesn't pass. And this may be a question, now that you've raised it, guys, that we want to have some perspective from the General Counsel's office in terms of how that, you know, those voting thresholds are affected by quorum requirements. So it actually is a question that goes beyond just these couple of paragraphs, Ray.
So for me, the question, do we need any, the first part of the second paragraph, referring to the quorum here, do we need that really? As we have already a paragraph 3.5.
You're talking about the paragraph members representing majority of representatives, that whole paragraph. Right, Wolf?
Pardon me?
You're questioning whether we need the entire paragraph that begins members representing a majority of representatives.
Well, I would say what we need is acts by. So then the GNSO council members present at any meeting at which there is a quorum shall be act of the GNS council, unless otherwise provided herein.
This is Rob. That sounds excellent.
Well, remember, though, acts of the GNSO council could be voting.
Well, but Wolf also suggested that, you know, consistent with other, I can't remember at the moment, Wolf, you know, with your exact comment, but, you know, you cautioned it or clarified it with respect to its consistency with other sections. Or with the bylaws, I believe.
Yeah, according to the bylaws. That's clear.
All right, I need a new draft on this. How do we want to do this, Wolf? Usually Julie is our drafter. She'll come back with the modified language.
Yes, but I just put a copy to my email and send it to you directly. So.
Oh, you did. That's great. Okay.
Then we could in between we could. Go forward and then come back to that maybe. Yeah? So let me. I would do that. Yeah?
Okay. Let me go back to Rob's point too. Now back to 3.5. This sort of drives to the point of, we always got to keep in mind the bicameral structure. We say a quorum is a majority of voting members. It may need to read, thinking out loud, a quorum is a majority of voting members of each house. If we're not clear there, we're potentially being ambiguous to the point of usurping the bicameral structure. Does that make sense, Wolf?
Oh, sorry, I didn't follow you.
No, that's okay. We say right now a quorum is a majority of voting members, voting council members.
Yeah. Cool.
There's a chance, by just saying it that way, that a majority of voting council members is not representing a majority from each house.
Okay.
So then if that's the case, potentially, due to ambiguity, the bicameral structure, the whole thinking, the whole foundation of that is being usurped. For sake of a better word. I mean, it's just, I don't know what the right word is, but we're not being consistent. So we could say, to remedy this, what we could say, a quorum is a majority of voting members of each house.
Yeah, yes, but you know, so on the other hand, in the bylaws, we have outlined specific cases where we need a majority of each house. Yeah, in referring to the PDP status and what else, you know, different cases we have. They are, so what we are defining here is a quorum, which is in addition referring to other cases. That's what I understand. So, you know, referring to the cases which are defined in the bylaws, so there must be a quorum in those cases. And this is not... bypassed by that paragraph 3.5. That's what I understand, because the bylaws are the bylaws.
So are you saying that it's not necessarily important for us to clarify that a quorum is a majority of voting members of each house? You don't think that's necessary?
So, you know, I understand that would mean here if we formulate that. That in certain cases the council cannot vote. So in any case where is no majority of each house, then there is no voting. Is it? Because we say at the time of a vote there must be a quorum. That's the last sentence here. And is that the meaning?
Maybe at the time of a vote there must be a quorum.
Yeah, but
There must be a majority. Maybe instead of saying there must be a quorum, at the time of a vote there must be a majority of voting members from each house.
I'm not very well experienced in all the votings of the council voting. You know, I understand voting is done with regards to the PDP process activities, and on the other hand, also to some minor issues as well, like administratively or what else. So the question is, should there be in all cases really that quorum that both houses shall have a majority? So this is just a question, you know, for that. I'm asking you, the others, Rob and others, so are there cases then that there's voting done in the on council level on minor issues, and it should be avoided that we put the level so high, you know, for minor issues?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is Rob. I think that was one of the discussions that you guys initiated in Sydney when you first started talking about a quorum. It was that balance between being able to just conduct business.
Yeah.
versus trying to make sure that everybody has an opportunity for a voice, balancing, you know, the attempt where if somebody really doesn't like a potential action, they could delay it or prevent it from happening just by not showing up. I know I created this problem by noting the difference between 3.5 and 5.3, but I'd like to throw it to Glenn just briefly to clarify a point you guys have probably talked about in the past that may resolve this in some respects, and that is on the really important issues, you basically go, Glenn, I believe, to the absentee ballot approach. And so that almost obviates the need for a quorum from some perspective, because everybody is getting a chance to vote ultimately over a 24 or 48-hour period, even if they were not able to attend the council meeting itself.
Yes,
is that correct?
That is correct. And actually, we can only do that if there is a quorum in council, or if there will be a quorum, as quorum is going to be defined, because the quorum allows us to carry on our business. And that is one of the questions that has come up already in council, and that is, if there is not a quorum, can we go ahead anyway with an absentee ballot vote in order to get the votes in from all the councillors? And I think it was legal counsel who gave the advice that we couldn't do that because we had to have a quorum to, first of all, start our business. Does that perhaps help?
Yeah, this is
very helpful.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So we can get the majority vote through absentee ballots if people, of course, don't bother to vote, or if they just ignore it, then, well, that's their problem, and that's the problem of their stakeholder group, too.
Okay. Well, I don't want to dwell too much on this. If we're okay with quorum as it is written, I'm okay with it. Just wanted to have the discussion.
Yeah. So I sent it to you, my suggestion of the 5.3. I don't know whether you received already.
Not yet. I don't have it.
It's just only a part of the second paragraph, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't gotten anything yet. Did you send it to me personally, Ray, at go2.jobs?
I sent it to the...
our list?
To our list.
Oh, okay, great. That's even better. I think I got it. There it is. Okay. I'm just going to read it. Acts by the Genus Hole Council members present at any meeting at which there is a quorum shall be acts of the Genus Hole Council unless otherwise provided herein. Let me go back to the original language. Well, I think that's much better. Again, I think to Rob's point, we're cutting out words. And it makes sense to me. Okay, let's offer that modification to the list and see if there's any anybody that objects. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Rob, I think you like that for clarity purposes too, right?
Yes, sir. I think it's a market improvement.
Okay. Good. Okay. Let me keep going here on a couple of my notes. All right. So back to this same theme here. If I go back, let's look at section 5.1, if you can, Wolf.
Yeah.
All right.
So, 5.1, yeah?
Yeah. There's the first sentence, then there's a bigger body paragraph, and then the very last paragraph. It says, except where determined by a majority vote of members of the Genus Hole Council. See that sentence?
Uh-huh. Yes, I see.
Yeah. So this is specific to what? Whether there can be a closed session or you know, all sessions are default to open unless there's a vote of the members. Yeah. So again, when we talk about voting, so I'm thinking, except where determined by a majority vote of members of each house of the GNSO Council present. Again, inserting that language in there, of each house. We're talking about voting again.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, okay. So it's just a question how people, how council members, you know, look at that case, you know, to hold a closed session or an open session.
Mm-hmm.
So
should we, so the overriding question, higher level, is should it ever be deviated for that we need a majority of each house? I mean, should we be so clear on this that it can't be deviated, regardless of the issue?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is Rob, if I can comment.
Yeah, please, Rob.
This assumes that, at least as I read it now, that you already have a quorum.
Right.
Because you've already got a meeting. So then the question is, are you creating a new voting threshold for closing meetings that requires a majority from each house to approve that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah, that's it. Right.
Okay.
And regardless of the issue, so the point I'm making is that this one happens to be about a closed session, but the point is that in the rules of procedure, we're talking about, you know, a vote of the members, a vote of the council.
Yeah.
And every time we talk about a vote of the members or a vote of the council, should we always say, be clear, that is, we need a majority from each house, so there's no ambiguity.
Yeah. Well, in this case, I would agree.
Okay.
Directly, because, you know, looking at the interest of ICANN, so ICANN is an open organization, and we should have meetings as open as possible, as much as
right.
possible. So then the level to decide not to have an open meeting should be very high. So that's what you are doing with that, if you implement the both houses. So then that means for me the level shall be higher to come to an agreement about closed meetings. That's the result of it.
This is Rob. Just for the record, Glenn, can you recall if there has ever been a closed session of the GNSO Council?
Yes, there was not of the council itself, but of a meeting, a pre-council meeting. And it caused such an uproar that it was never to be thought of again. It happened in New Zealand.
Okay.
But the council meeting has never been closed, to the best of my knowledge, in all the time I've been there.
Hmm. Okay. From my point of view, we could do that here because it makes it more difficult, even more difficult to hold closed meetings.
Okay. So, I mean, a part of what I'm hearing, too, is it should be, or it's logical for it to be case dependent. You know, whether we say each house, majority of each house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, yeah, we all believe that council meetings should be open, so make the threshold as high as possible. Which is, I agree with that. Don't get me wrong. But I guess the higher level point I was making in is whatever it is that the council might be voting on, we are clear in the ROP that it requires a majority of each house.
Yeah. This is a basic question, really, Ray. So.
That's why I wanted to bring it up. It
yeah.
is.
So let's just
keep it. Maybe we can just look at it through the entire document and see what those cases are and go that direction. We could try that.
Okay.
All right. But just. Slightly different. So under 5.4 is where it is the number of votes cast. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. There's something I think we're saying, and I'm looking at Julie's mock-up. I think we said it. It says to pass a motion must attain a majority of the votes cast. Abstentions count as votes cast. So that Does that mean that an abstention, well, it says abstention count, this has the effect of making abstention count the same as a vote against. What is the logic of that? Why would we have an abstention be counted as a vote against? Should it be neutral? Not for, not against?
I think the point, this is Rob, I think the point that's trying to be made here, and not having drafted it, I'm just guessing, is that in effect, or from a practical standpoint, if you have to meet a certain voting threshold of five people, and you have seven and three abstain, then in effect, those three abstentions are not votes for, so they are votes against. And then there are apparently, you know, these exceptions to that rule. I don't quite understand at this moment. We may have to ask Julie that, if she's the one who wrote this down initially.
Okay, yeah, let's keep that as an open point.
I don't know, Glenn, you have any perspective on this piece about abstentions and their effect? I know that more recently the chair has asked members who abstain to articulate the reasons for that abstention. But I don't know how you count them, Glenn, when you're, you know, reflecting a vote of the council.
I can also tell you from experience, it's Glenn speaking, that abstentions are counted as votes against.
Presently?
And it happened once at, I can't remember where it was, but it was at an open council meeting during an ICANN meeting. And there were, say, for example, 10 votes in favor, and there were 6 abstentions. And, well, in any case, the vote was counted so that those abstentions were counted as no votes, and the motion didn't pass.
Uh-huh. And
the abstention, the reason for abstention has always been asked for because previously it was required by the board to know why people abstained from voting. When something was passed to the board, it always has to have the exact wording of the person why they abstained. And I think that's probably why it's become habit now.
Okay. And this language here where abstention counts against is consistent with the proposed bylaws. I'm assuming that, right?
Yep.
Okay.
But Wolf speaking. So my question is, so in several cases, there are abstentions because people have interests in that specific question which is voted about. So let me say, an interest as an registrar or not, and then they abstain. So, but how could that count against? That's
this is Glenn. I agree with you, Wolf. That is, in fact, it happened the other day on council again. Somebody abstained from approving the minutes, and the reason for abstaining from approving the minutes was because they were they were absent from that meeting. So I agree with you. There is a passage that is unclear there.
This is Rob. Maybe I can shed a little bit of light. I became a lawyer because I wasn't good at math. I think, and so maybe you guys can help in this respect. But let's say your threshold is 50%, and you have 10 votes, but somebody, and so you need 5 people to vote, but 2 people abstain. And so now are you calculating that percentage on 10 or on 8?
Yeah.
I think that's where this falls into play.
Yes, that's what I see correctly.
Okay.
And so maybe with your knowledge of that, Wolf Ulrich and Ray, with, you know, maybe that perspective as well, you guys may want to revisit this area again. I'm not sure of that, and I'm not sure if that was in Julie's mind in this section, but that might impact the viewpoint of some of the other work team members. I don't know. In many respects, it doesn't really matter with small numbers because we're dealing in percentages. And so, you know, when Glenn is doing calculations, I think it becomes more of an issue the more people you have participating in a vote. But it's certainly something that everybody should be aware of.
Yes. So, Wolf, what do you think? You want to revisit this with the rest of the team?
Yes, yes.
Next week? Okay.
Yeah.
I need to think about it some more. And unfortunately, that's one of my weaknesses as a chair, just for the record, is I have to think about things. I'm not real quick. Okay. So,
some would argue that that's a strength.
What was that, Rob?
Some would argue that that is a strength.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. On the 5.5 minutes, I have a question. We say that the GSO Council shall transmit minutes of its meetings to the ICANN secretary. Now, when I read that the first time, I'm thinking secretariat, right? I'm thinking GSO Council secretariat. But when I read it literally, ICANN secretary is John Jeffrey. Is that really our intention?
I guess this is another Glenn question in terms of what currently happens now versus what might happen in the future. Glenn, you don't currently send stuff to John Jeffrey, do you?
No, I don't. Except if it is something that has to go to the board, and then Avery does that.
Right. So here we're just talking about minute transmittal.
Yes.
So we should probably fix this to say the GSO Council shall transmit minutes of its meetings to the GSO Council Secretariat?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the Secretariat produces the minutes.
Yeah, and then, right. There was my next part. Okay. So, right. So it's a little, yeah.
What presently happens and what has happened for a very long time is that the minutes have gone to the chair and the vice chair first. Edit them, and then they're sent to the council list.
All right, so maybe how we say this is the GSO Council Secretary shall transmit minutes to the council chair and vice chairs.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
All right. Let me work on that.
This is Rob again. Just one point of order here,
That
is, you know, you're describing a process that may be useful to have, particularly in the rules and operating procedures. You're probably talking about two separate pieces, because as I read 5.5, I read those as being the approved minutes. You know, once Glenn typically does whatever she does, Avery and Chuck have looked at it, the council then votes at their next meeting or the meeting thereafter and quote-unquote approves the minutes. And so then they get, I guess, posted on the website. So you may want, this may end up being a much larger section that just reflects all of those acts.
Those steps.
Yes.
The steps. So first there's the taking of the minutes, then who it gets transmitted to, and then what happens to the approval of the minutes.
Okay, that's in 5.5A.
Okay. All right, so let me ask this then. You're right, it is. It is sort of covered in there. So,
yeah.
So do we even, what is that first paragraph? Do we even need that first paragraph?
Maybe you put it to the end.
You know, 5.5, do we?
It should be all, you know, that's...
You mean as the last step?
As the last step, you know. So we could call... The whole paragraph only 5.5, and then start with the procedure, and at the end we put that paragraph that the General Council shall transmit and so on.
That's a good idea, and actually the last paragraph repeats some of the text.
Okay. So we don't... So we don't really need 5.5a. We just need it might read 5.5 procedure of minutes, and then we just go into it. Does that make sense? Or did I just confuse everybody?
Yeah.
And then we take what is existing now as the first paragraph under 5.5 minutes, and from a blocking and tackling standpoint, we just move that step all the way to the end. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, because 5.5a, the last paragraph, also includes the approval of the board. Is that necessary? I'm asking. So because all minutes of the meetings, no later than the day after the date on which they are formally approved by the board.
So it should be council there.
Yeah.
It should be board, right. That should be changed to council. That's a good catch.
So, I wasn't reading that before. I was thinking, okay, that's just procedure, and it's not that important, but, okay, it's really important to go across.
Hey, Wolf, I'm guilty of the same thing. I read ICANN Secretary 1,000 times, and the vision of Glenn is popping in my head instead of reading what it means.
I think this is Rob again. I think part of this is that these procedures came from the original, perhaps DNSO, and there may be aspects of this that need to remain. In that, if the new GNSO will heavily utilize working groups, that when you read that last paragraph, it currently says all minutes of meetings of the GNSO and any councils thereof. Might be helpfully modified by saying any meetings of the GNSO Council and any working groups or something like that in parentheses.
Mm-hmm.
Or just take that, or at least at this point until the working group model work team is done with all its efforts, just take out that parenthetical and have it say all minutes of meetings of the GNSO Council shall be approved promptly and that whole first sentence isn't really necessary, perhaps. There may be some, I don't know if we can just do it right now, but that needs to be overhauled, that last paragraph and the very first paragraph you were referring to, Ray.
Yeah, let me take a step at this one. I'll draft something and send it to the list, and then you guys...
This is Glenn again. Can I give you a bit of background there?
Yeah.
Indeed, that came from the old DNSO, and at that time there was not a full-time secretariat,
right.
And there were about three or four people on the staff of ICANN. One was Dan Halloran, and it was Dan who used to go through that because it was the chair didn't do it.
Right.
So I think it comes from a very long time ago, and for that reason. But obviously, we have moved very far away from that too.
Great. Well, let me take a stab at cleaning that up, and I'll send it to the list, and then you guys can fix it for me. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll do 5.5 and 5.5a. I'll probably collapse it into one some way.
I would say also we should reflect this working group model.
Yeah, right. So it says like any councils thereof, we would just update that to the new language, the new semantics.
Okay,
good. All right, let's see what else I have here. Okay, let's see. Is absentee voting covered in the new bylaws?
Yes, it is at the end. Not in the new bylaws, but here in the rules of procedure. It has been transferred to. So, before we go to that point, I still had another point here. That was a question with regards to, do we deal with paragraph, with section 4 as well or not?
Section 4, sure.
Yeah. Okay, it's section 4.1. And I had the question because if you look to the paragraph below B, point B, if the council chair is elected from one of the houses, however, then the council-level nominating committee appointee shall serve as one of the vice chairs. As we have in the new model, we shall have three NCAs. So the question is, and I understood it in that way, that it shall be the non-voting NCA. Okay,
That is correct. This is Rob. That non-voting NCA is intended to serve as sort of this council level advisor position, and I think this provision is drafted right now notes that the council chair ultimately is elected from one of the houses. To keep the balance on the leadership team, it was important for an independent player to be a part of that team. Otherwise, the leadership team of chair and two vice chairs might be dominated by one house or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 2 out of 3 concept, right?
Yes, sir.
That means we insert here then the non-voting or the council-level non-voting NCA.
That would be a good clarification, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I agree in this context, but as long as you mentioned it, I had the question on this what if this person doesn't have the skill set necessarily of a vice chair? We're defaulting the job, if you will, to somebody who may not have that skill set.
Yeah, I would say the NOMCOM. That's one of the tasks of the NOMCOM, to look at this.
Uh-huh.
So that should be a precondition for the NOMCOM.
Okay. That's good clarification. Another one on this for clarification that I had was, we say that, if the chair is elected from one of the houses, that person shall retain his or her vote in that house. Should we be clear that we also mean the same thing for any of the vice chairs? We specifically point out that if the chair is elected from one of the houses, that person shall retain his or her vote in that house. But we don't say the same thing for the vice chairs. Should we? That the vice chairs will also retain their vote in his or her house?
Yes, I think that is pointed out already, isn't it?
I don't think so. We have a sentence, right in that same paragraph, we have a sentence that says, if the chair is elected from one of the houses, that person shall retain his or her vote in that house.
Yes.
To me, that seems logical, almost unsaid, but we're saying it. Then the question I have, as long as we're saying that, do we need to say that the vice chairs elected from one of the houses, that those persons shall retain his or her vote in their respective house?
Yes, I was thinking that it was already in the bylaws dealing with the structure of the house, and then there's something in the bylaws with regards to the election of chairs and vice chairs as well. Isn't it, Bob?
That I don't know. This is Ray. I don't know. You're saying that that's already covered, or you're suggesting that it might be covered in the bylaws already, Wolf?
Yes, I think so, but it should be checked, really.
Okay.
But I think I have read it, but it's not here in the rules of procedure, but maybe in the bylaws. But okay, we have to check it. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, we'll do that. I mean, the language that's here drafted in 4.1 was taken directly from the consensus working group that met July of last year. And I think as part of their consensus discussions, it was a particular point of discussion that, you know, the chair would have a vote as opposed to, you know, someone who would just be acting in an administrative capacity. And so in running for the chair position, someone was not giving up their ability or opportunity to express a vote on the council.
Mm-hmm.
They did not. I just went back. I just went back and looked at their final report that they provided to the board. They did not include any specific language about the vice chairs. So if you guys wanted to add that, that would be something separate from what they had originally put together. Not whether that's good or bad, just making that
observation. Right. I was just raising it, too. If it's not a big issue, it's just for clarity.
Okay. So and I edit the following two paragraphs. It's
okay.
In green. You see that in green?
Which one, Wolf?
After the paragraph we were just talking about, the NCA, there are two paragraphs which are in green. Should be in green, I think so. So in my text, it's in green. So it starts with, in the event that the GNSO Council has not elected, and so on. You see those?
Yes.
So those paragraphs, those paragraphs I inserted as a suggestion, though. Because there was something in it before with regards to the election or to the case, if there is no successful election of a council chair, happens then. So, and then the question, how to really come to to a successful election.
Yeah.
Yes, this is Rob, and the council is aware that they still have an expectation from the board that right now they only have a provision for the first ballot for electing the chair, and the board has asked the GNSO council, and it is still a to-do for them, to develop and agree on the process for subsequent ballots in terms of how to approach that. But this would be an important fallback provision that I believe the working group last July also came up with, just to make sure that if in fact there was some sort of a stalemate, that the council could continue to function and in an administrative capacity, of course, the two vice chairs would serve collectively as the chair for the council.
Well, based on that, I mean, is this addition that Wolf added, is it providing the clarity that we're looking for? I think, Wolf, what you're saying is that, you know, what happens if the GNSO Council has not elected a chair? Then what? Right?
You know, the reason why I put it in is the following. So if I look to the bylaws, now the existing suggestion for public comment, the paragraph which deals with the council chair election says, in the event that the GNSO council has not elected a GNSO council chair by the end of the previous chair's term, the vice chairs will serve as interim GNSO co-chairs until a successful election can be held, that full stop. So that's until a successful election can be held. So I think the rules of procedure should contain something which deals with what does it mean until a successful election can be held.
I see.
So that's the reason why I put it in here. So and then the second paragraph may be there's a second sentence I put it in was, each follow-up council meeting shall be used to conduct a successful council chair election. There must be something which binds the council to come to a successful election. So that's just a suggestion from my side here. Each follow-up council meeting shall be used to conduct a successful, you know, Otherwise, it could be a situation that, okay, maybe the council is more or less happy with having an interim solution for 1 or 2 years. Why not?
Right. Yeah. I think it's a good suggestion. I like it.
This is Rob. My only question there would be that I would expect that that wouldn't preclude the council from otherwise conducting, you know, perhaps an email ballot or something like that. And from that perspective, Glenn, you know, we've already been in some conversations over the last couple of weeks of what will happen during the transition. In the past, have the elections been held at a council meeting, or are they conducted via email? How is that currently done?
Up to now, Rob, the elections are held by email ballot. And the results of the email ballot has to be confirmed at a council meeting. And the old bylaws that we were acting under made provision for an election at a meeting, at an in-person meeting, or by electronic ballot. And it has just so happened that up to now we've had, it's been the most convenient way of doing it, that there's been a ballot sent out and that the results are confirmed at a council meeting.
Oh, okay, what I understand, if I understand your point, Rob and Glenn, so that means it should not be given the opportunity for voting for a chair election only at a person in-person meeting, but also in between. So as soon as possible, as it is, it's possible. So by balloting, for example. So in
My only concern was that you not limit it to council meetings, but
yes,
maybe have
yes,
that
yes.
Line.
No, I wouldn't do so. So if it's better, you know, to include or to do something else, to formulate something else?
I think if we go back to the old text, it was fairly clear that it could be done by either an email, an electronic ballot, or in a council meeting.
Yeah, sure.
Great, I'll confirm that with, if that's okay with you, Ray, as well, I'll confirm that with Julie, and she can remine and pull out that some of that old language to reflect Ulrich's really important point here, that there should be some mechanism to continue to encourage the council or force the council to continue to make efforts, and that, you know, it can't just be left in that stasis, you know, that limbo status. But that there needs to be continued efforts to conduct the election.
I think it's a good point. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all the comment I have for now. I have a few nits. What I'm also going to do is go through and see where it might say council members instead of working groups. And I have a few things like that maybe to send off to the list, but that can all be done, I think, on list. We did not get today to Section 5.8 and 16. Those are a little more complex issues, but that's okay. We'll get to that. We'll make that a priority for next call. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't have any more comment on this one right now for discussion. Does anybody else? And I have time, by the way, so if there is, I can stay on.
No questions. I do not have. The absentee voting, that was your question, it's under paragraph 16.
Yeah, so I guess we'll probably delve into that one a little more in-depthly. I think one point I wanted to make on that as I was reading through it is, you know, the issue of proxy voting. I think we could stay away from that. For now.
Mm-hmm.
So just throwing that out there. That's a very contentious issue. And our role here is just, you know, prioritizing we want to make sure we can get the council seated by Seoul. I don't know if we need to get into proxy voting to accomplish that. Okay, but that's for the next discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if that's all I have, if there's anything else by anybody, we can adjourn the meeting.
Yes. Yeah. Ray, just to confirm, your meeting time next week will be 1 hour earlier next Wednesday. Is that correct?
That's correct. 1500 UTC.
Moment. Just a minute. I have to check that. Oh, 1500, yeah. That means, okay. Good. It's better. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you, Wolf, for joining today, and Rob and Glenn and Gisela, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
Okay.
Thank you, Ray.
Sure. Bye-bye.
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 Bye.